my advice would be to trust your like instincts and your intuition, because the things that you're experiencing are so unique to you that there are only like little bits and pieces that people can offer that will relate to like your authentic journey. Really encourage a lot of people to like reflect, trust themselves, really take with a grain of salt like what other people say.
Welcome to Winning Streaks. I'm your host, Tanvir Mustafa, and every week I get deep into the stories and strategies of experts, champions, business moguls, and industry leaders to find out how you can win the day and win at life. If you're committed to never settling for the status quo and consistently challenging yourself to new heights, then this is the show for you. In return, I commit to bringing you insightful, practical, and no BS conversations that will help you create your next big win.
My guest today has accomplished quite a few crazy milestones in his career. He's not only been a top salesperson at leading tech companies, including TripActions, Naven, and Udemy, but also a two-time Tech Sales Presence Club winner, an adventurer who biked across the US, and a philanthropist who has significantly impacted lives around the globe. He's battled and overcome 20 years of depression and anxiety, investing over $32,000 in personal development to do so. Now, he's on a mission to share everything he's learned to help others achieve similar breakthroughs. Please join me in welcoming the founder of the self-improvement movement, Dan Ahn. Dan, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks for having me, Dan Vera. Super excited. And congrats on 1 year with your company.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Today marks 1 year, which is very exciting for me. And I'm excited for you, man. I've sort of been watching behind the scenes on LinkedIn of you launching the self-improvement movement and your journey. And I think it's really impressive what you're doing, but not just that. I think the world needs something like this, where people are challenged to become the best versions of themselves, which is, you know, what we're trying to do at Untap Your Sales Potential here for salespeople. But I guess the best place to start is, what is the self-improvement movement and why did you start it?
Yeah. So the self-improvement movement is a community for top performers, early stage creators, and entrepreneurs or solopreneurs. So basically people like me or maybe a couple of years behind me, and I don't mean that just necessarily in age, but just folks who are maybe frustrated, overwhelmed, feeling a little stuck with where they are in their journeys, whether that's with business or life. I think it's really just more holistic to the journey of becoming who we want to be and doing the things that we want to do. And so yeah, it's really just a space for people to come meet new people. So we have a newsletter, we have a online community, and soon to be podcast and a YouTube channel. But I think we're getting ourselves out there in terms of social media. And then we meet a couple times a week over, you know, Google Meets, and really just discuss our lives. So really a chance to combat this lonely epidemic that we're in, connect with each other and share what's working and what's not.
Mm-hmm. What was it born out of? Why did you feel the need to launch something like this?
Yeah. Where was it born out of? Well, I'd say it was born out of like my current needs and just like the thing that I thought I would have wanted when I was younger. So I spent, as you mentioned, tons of money on coaching, courses, therapies, communities, really over the past like 2 to 3 years, but it's accelerated more so on the community and coaching side over the past year to really address just like lifelong issues with like depression, anxiety, like emotions, learning how to feel and all that good stuff. So when I started my entrepreneurial journey, which was like 5-6 months ago now, it was really just things fell into place, and I started asking myself, like, what can I do that can serve others? And when I thought about like what was the most important work in my life, it was a lot of the inner work that I did. So mm-hmm. Want to give that to the world. Seems like a lot of people want it, and I definitely do. So it was really to create the thing that I guess I want and wanted and could probably continue to see myself getting energized by in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about it all the time here at Untap, which is like it starts with the inner work, right? You know, this is someone who's hit Presence Club twice. Like you've got to have the inner stuff sort of figured out a little bit before you go off and set out to hit your quotas and whatnot. But some of the things that you mentioned, right? Overwhelmed, feeling stuck. There's a lot of sellers that listen to this podcast, and I know that a lot of them go through these things, right? That anxiety, that stress, in some cases depression. As someone who's invested over $32,000 to sort of find some of the answers, right? what have been some of the biggest takeaways for you in terms of addressing those roadblocks and challenges as a seller and now with what you do now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think some of the big ones are really just like, you can't not feel things. I think like one of the big breakthroughs for me during therapy was when I asked my therapist, like, how do I feel my emotions? And it was like, just one of those things where like, I can't believe like I just asked another person like how to feel my emotions. So I think one, that's bad because like a lot of buying decisions are made through emotion. And so it's not like people are not just like logical buyers. And so when you aren't in touch with your emotions, you're not going to be as relatable in terms of like tapping into other people's emotions and like exactly like the fears and anxieties that buyers may have as they're going about making these purchasing decisions. So being more empathetic and tuning into like some of the, you know, I guess frustrations I felt during the sales process could be felt by other buyers. So I think learning how emotions come into play, again, with not just like business and sales, but life overall and relating, connecting with other people was super helpful for me to just become, you know, not a robot logical seller that's using data and facts and ROIs, but also relating with people more.
Yeah. I'm actually giving a workshop on this at our next mastermind event. Cause we call it software selling, but I think we forget the soft side of it. Everyone's obsessed with becoming like this hardcore closer and just like pushing the sale versus like just being a human, honestly, like relating to the client, empathizing towards their struggles, empathizing toward their problems, et cetera. I think it's a big gap in like modern sales training / enablement. But for you specifically, like with your journey, whether it be as a seller or, you know, now as an entrepreneur, I know when you started out, you know, you weren't necessarily optimized. You were going through a lot of stress, anxiety, and you work specifically on this thing called people's life score. And I think back then you would have rated yourself like a 3 out of 10 in terms of your own personal life score. Why did you rate yourself that way? What was going on in your personal journey that was making you feel that way? Like a 3 out of 10.
Yeah. I think no matter what I did, there was just like a dissatisfaction with where I was in life. So it's like the milestones, the goalposts were so far ahead and I was here. And I don't think I realized like, yeah, like those things are out there, but like, there's also like this life that I'm living now, which is like, you know, I had a good day. Maybe I made some calls, maybe I made some connects, maybe I didn't and I got hung up on, but like, that is still a good day. So I think I was just like really focused on like external events and like achievements and didn't really ask myself like how I was doing, how I was feeling. And I guess just had a lot of, measured a lot of my validation through external success, which is a dangerous thing to do, when that's the only thing that is determining your happiness. So yeah, I think for me, it just never felt, I never felt like I was enough and never felt like I was doing, doing enough. So I think a lot of self-compassion work and a lot of acceptance and all of the things that I learned in therapy and coaching there helped me just become happy with like who I am outside of like anything I do or achieve. Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? I know you're not necessarily a therapist, but you know, you mentioned asking your therapist, like, how do you feel? Or how do I feel? What's the answer to that question? Like, how do people sort of process some of these emotions internally and,
yeah,
and upgrade? First of all, actually, could you help us in describing what life score is and then talk through how you went about approving yours?
Yeah. So I've kind of moved a little bit away from like the life score language because it's felt a bit kind of out there. But I would say one thing I still do and I guess could still be considered a life score is I started this habit of like tracking my mood every day. So like on a scale of 0 to 10, I would give myself a score, which is where the life score came out of. And 5 kind of being neutral, 10 being like, you know, this is the perfect day, 0 being like horrible, this is, I'm in hell. I would kind of rank, my score every day. And so that really helped me get in touch with like what was happening throughout the day, like what were the triggers and like realizing like, oh, like just because the day was a 3, it doesn't mean like I'm a 3. Mm-hmm. And so going back to the question of like what helped me get more in touch with my emotions and feelings and what that looked like, my dog is trying to play with me. I didn't realize when people said you had to like sit with your emotions, like you literally just sit there and feel your emotions. So I think it looked like a lot of that in the beginning. I think just sitting and like trying to feel like in my body where there might be stress. I think for me, it was a lot of times like in the chest or the lungs be tight, maybe like a clenched up like gut or stomach. So I think when you're getting in touch with your feelings, you want to like a lot of that stress is stored in the body. So for me, it was like really identifying like physically, how is this like showing up? So it'd be like, again, literally sitting there and like kind of scanning my body head to toe, asking myself like, where's the stress being stored? Mm-hmm. And then from there, like once I got a bit more, like I advanced into the self-compassion work, what that looked like was one of those techniques. It's called, RAIN. I think Tara Brach shares it in one of her books, Radical Compassion, I think. And the framework of RAIN stands for recognize, accept, integrate, or investigate. And then N might be like nurture. So recognize being just like, you know, you're kind of accepting, recognizing what you're feeling. So you're like doing that scan, you're identifying like where the stress is. A is acceptance. So you're just like kind of saying, hey, like, this is what it is. Like, I am stressed. You're not like denying or suppressing what you're feeling and like just trying to power through and get to the other side. Investigate, asking like, you know, what can I do to help myself? Like, or what does this part of me need? Mm-hmm. Like, why are my shoulders so stressed? And like, what can I do to like alleviate that? And then N being like the practical solution of that. It's like, okay, like maybe I need rest or maybe I need to go for a walk, and then going out and doing those things and like giving your body and yourself like what you need. So that framework of like compassion was really helpful because it really helped me slow down to like identify, accept, explore, and do, I guess, which honestly isn't too far from, I think I've heard a couple like discovery frameworks that are similar. So you're basically just doing self-discovery on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, I love that you mentioned that, because I say it all the time. Like, we do discovery with our clients, our customers, like every day, but rarely do we actually like look inwards and ask ourselves those questions, right? Like, where is our pain? How big is it? When does it need to be solved by? Why does it need to be solved? Like, we never ask those questions ourselves. Meanwhile, we're stressed out of our minds. We're overwhelmed. We're, you know, lacking confidence, lacking clarity, like lacking energy, lacking focus. And it compounds on top of each other. So I think, you know, one of the best things that I did for my sales career was in the morning, instead of just popping open my phone first thing, just like sitting down, making a cup of coffee and just sitting there. Like, sometimes, and you know, obviously there's the meditation and the breath work, which now I do, but at the beginning, it was just like, let me just sit and let me just think and let my mind do its thing. And I think there's a tremendous amount of power in that, because nowadays with, you know, social media, phones, everything, like everything's trying to hijack your attention. So you're never really giving yourself the opportunity for your mind to just, you know, do its thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is super important. Like, Jeff Bezos kind of like talks about this a lot, where he like putters in the morning, where he just like kind of lets his mind wander and do those, do anything. And it's really in those like pockets of doing nothing where creativity like blossoms and you get other ideas from whatever the universe. I think that's why people get like their ideas in the shower, because it's when like you allow your mind to shut off and things just come to you instead of you just forcing things. So I think it's super important to like have those dumb moments where you're not like just constantly hammering things and like trying to impose your will into the universe. Cause like, you know, that's just not how life works.
Yeah. This imposing will thing has been like a big learning lesson for me. Cause I always thought that you could just muscle your way to results, like when whatever area you're trying to improve your life in. And then it just came to a point where I realized there's a certain aspect of surrender that needs to be involved, where you just got to kind of like do the thing, like do the inputs, but then surrender to the outcomes. Like, I think it's what you were talking about earlier, which is like, if you obsess over the results, then you're always going to be wanting more because it's never going to feel like enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think like maybe for the short term, you could muscle things and like impose your will into certain things, but like burnout, just like trying too hard, it like doesn't seem like a productive long-term strategy. Yeah. So, yeah. I think having balancing that out with surrendering and like letting life happen to you is super important as well.
Yeah. What else have you done? Because you went from like a 3 out of 10 to like an 8 out of 10 in terms of like your personal life score, right? So you talked about some of the self-compassion and the RAIN exercise. What are some of the other things that you've done to really like get to a point now where obviously no one's perfect, but you're much better off than you were in the past?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think emotions was like a big one in the self-compassion piece. I think maybe even taking that a step further, almost more into the realm of like cognitive behavioral therapy and like reading some books on that and just like taking the lessons that my therapist was teaching me. And there was like some other frameworks that one of my coaches was like, I guess, first in ACT, which is acceptance and commitment therapy. Anyway, a lot of these ideas are the same. It's, you know, you kind of observe your thoughts, beliefs, and emotions and like see what's like serving you and what's not, and what are maybe what's hindering you from getting what you want. So a lot of that, I guess, I did on my, did with my therapist and coaches, but the work that I did alone was a lot of like reflective questions. Mm-hmm. So I'd give myself a prompt like, you know, if I was being hard on myself for playing video games, I'd be like, what is my relationship been with video games? And then diving deep into like the context of like, oh, I actually used video games to entertain myself when I was a kid. And obviously I spent probably like half my life when I was a kid playing video games. So it's like, no wonder when I'm stressed now, I revert back to these old tendencies. Mm-hmm. And so like noticing how video games have like been a part of my life during some of my, I guess you could consider it loneliest times when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And how that gave me company, gave me a lot of compassion for like these negative habits or like negative coping mechanisms that I would feel bad about or guilt trip myself for. But then you realize like, ooh, like I kind of have a history here where this thing gave me a lot of comfort and a lot of joy. So how do I like tease apart where that has been super helpful in the past and like was maybe one of the only vehicles which I can express myself and like have a good time and entertain myself versus now I'm an adult, obviously you don't want to cope with those behaviors or like do those things. And so like, how do I then reshape my relationship with video games without like completely discarding the value that it had in the past? So a lot of like just excavating questions to dig into like things on a deeper level and like see how they've impacted me and like continue to impact me in like these really nuanced ways that, you know, you don't like consciously think about because they're just so subconsciously ingrained in your like behaviors. Yeah. So video games is one example, but, you know, I'm sure there's a ton of other ones. Yeah.
What'd you like to play? What was your go-to?
I still can be tempted into Wild Rift every now and then, which is like the mobile version of League of Legends, but you know, RuneScape, Neopets, Counter-Strike, yeah, played them all. Nice. But League of Legends and like Dota were probably the latest evolution.
Gotcha. Yeah, RuneScape was all the rage when I was growing up. But no, look, I think what you're talking about is tools and strategies to cope. Because, you know, one of my favorite documentaries is, it's called Stutz. I think it's like a documentary on Jonah Hill's therapist.
Yeah.
And he talks about the two things that are sort of inevitable in life are, I think he says pain and uncertainty, I think are the two things. And those things are going to happen, but how you deal with them is through the tools that you have at your disposal and knowing what some of those tools are. So you've talked about some of them already. Nowadays, when you're facing some of that stress and anxiety, because man, I face it too. Like I was telling my wife yesterday, I was just like, I don't know. Like, I just don't feel, I'm not feeling it. Like something's off. And, there are days where like, I love getting up and going to work. And there are other days where I'm just like, I'm beat, you know, how do you deal with those days that everything's not perfect?
Yeah. It's a good question. Been feeling like that lately. It's kind of continuing to use the tools, honestly. I think I was telling a friend that I had stopped like mood tracking and giving myself that score every day because I guess there's like kind of layers to that, but now it's like, that's like almost part of my brand. And like, I like tell people, oh, I spent a lot of money and I use this thing to like go from a 3 to an 8.
Yeah.
And so there was like this guilt almost of like, oh, it's like, I'm having a, like a 4 day or like a 5 day. It's like, well, I'm the guy who like went from a 3 to an 8. Like I can't be a 4. So it's been also weird now to navigate this like period of my life where I'm so public with everything. And like, I've shared this story of transformation, which is a beautiful story and I'm super proud of it. And I still struggle. And so it's kind of continually being open about that. Well, first of all, it's continuing to keep myself honest with the mood tracking and be like, hey, I can be the guy who went from a 3 to an 8 and also experiences like a 4 day and like have a bad day. Like that's totally okay. Mm-hmm. So I think it's continuing to use the tools and like continuing to explore like the narratives and the beliefs in my head, like the belief that like, oh, because I went from a 3 to an 8, like I can't have a bad day. So, and I blast it all over social media. So it's really just continuing to use the tools in different parts of my life because the context changes and so much has changed in the past year that like really my thought process, my beliefs, and my feelings towards things have changed. And so it is interesting to use the tools in like a new context because it's almost like an entirely different challenge. It's like, I don't know, like you could run a marathon in a completely flat ground, but if you run a marathon like in the mountains at elevation, like sure, it's like the same motion technically, but like it's totally different ball game. So I think the trick to whether it's like athletics or sales or, you know, mental health, it's really just using the same tools over and over again. Because at the end of the day, like whether you're calling an SMB or enterprise account, like it's going to be kind of like different tactics, but like at the end of the day, you're picking up the phone, making a dial and like overcoming objections. So I think the more you can like master the fundamentals and like go back to the basics, like that's probably would be my advice to myself and to anybody else who thinks that there's a new shiny tool now that you've, I don't know, graduated to enterprise sales or whatever.
Yeah. It's one of like Kobe Bryant's like late great Kobe Bryant, God bless his soul. His keys to success was like, never get bored with the basics. Like when you do that and you really hone in on some strong key fundamentals over time, like that's how you build consistency. Like now you're being tested as an entrepreneur, right? To continue to use those tools and continue to, and the important piece is like being honest with yourself. Since the last time you and I spoke, I've been using this thing that I call a human optimization tracker. So kind of similar to a mood tracker, but I'm tracking like my sleep, my aura score, my readiness score, my total sleep time. And I'm a guy that talks a lot about high performance on LinkedIn from time to time, but my sleep score has been absolute trash over the past week. It's been like, I had a 44 today, which is like really bad. And I had like, basically I've been averaging like a 60. Now that's partly because I'm fasting and that kind of like does certain things to my schedule. But you can't be perfect. No one can be. But the reason that you've been able to upgrade, I think your score from a 3 to an 8 is consistently being honest with yourself and consistently doing those reflections and using those tools versus just, you know, letting everything fall where they may and not really taking a certain degree of control over your day to day. At least that's how it looks like from my perspective. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely during that 3 to 8 period, I think it was like anywhere from, I think I might've missed 3 months, but it was like 3 months or 3 to 4 months on, and then took a couple months off and then 9 months straight. And then again, like kind of fell off, and then lo and behold, guess what's happening to my mental health? It's dipping down. So there's a funny correlation between every time I use the tools, it's like things are good. Every time I don't, it's like, it's a little sus. So yeah, consistency is so important with internal work and any kind of work.
How did you apply these principles back when you were a seller? Like what are some of the things that you did to, I mean, you know, there's using the tools on a day-to-day basis, but did you start approaching your job differently or your day-to-day differently as a result of learning some of these things?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the funny thing. I didn't really have these tools when I was a seller. It was like towards the tail end when I was like already pretty burnt out and not feeling it. So a lot of the mood tracking and like a lot of the comprehensive use of the tools started like when I was like basically at wit's end at my last job. So if I had these tools during my job, that might have been different. But sometimes you have to learn things the hard way.
Yeah. Now, well, look, I think, again, I went through the same thing. I had 2 years of like performing really well. But I got stressed out, burnt out, which is why I needed a sales coaching program. So that's why I ended up taking this one. But I also know a lot of people are thinking about their lives post selling, right? A lot of people listening to this are like, you know, I don't want to be in sales forever. Maybe I want to go launch my own business, do my own thing. As someone who's made that transition from being a seller to, you know, now being an entrepreneur for 5-6 months, what advice would you give that person, good and bad? You know, what's sort of been your experience in making that transition?
Yeah. I think I was talking on a LinkedIn Live with Ian Mai the other day, May, and we were talking about how he got this advice where if you don't like love the job that you have now, like nothing's going to change when you do the new job or like the next entrepreneur thing, because like the same challenges you're experiencing now or the same personalities that are giving you grief, like you're going to run into that again. So I think there is some truth to like, if you don't learn how to be like happy where you are, then like you're not going to be happy ever. Mm-hmm. And so like, what are the challenges? Like what are the specific challenges, obstacles, pain points that you're experiencing in your current day to day? And like, what can you do to address that? Because like, that is where the work is. And like, no matter where you go, what you do, that's not going to change. And so it's funny now, like managing myself as like an entrepreneur is like, oh, like, now I can see like where things may have been difficult with like other managers, and like I have a lot more grace and empathy for them, because I'm a tough guy to manage. So now I'm like learning how to manage myself, and like now I'm the boss that like I struggled with in the past. So it's just like interesting how things come full circle, and the work that you put off or avoid will meet you in the future. So I will say, as a founder who now has to be my own boss, like it's not an easy job. And so have that conversation with your boss now, because if you're going to be your own boss, like that's the conversation you're going to be having with yourself 6 months, 9 months, whenever, down the line.
That's a really good takeaway. I remember, you know, there was a point where I was considering like leaving Salesforce, right? But I knew that if I left with all the problems that I had, that those problems were going to carry forward, and I was going to feel a certain level of guilt over the fact that I left those problems unresolved. So I wanted to make sure that before I left Salesforce, wherever I went, I left saying that, you know what, I left everything out there on the table. I did everything I could before moving on to that next thing. And it worked, like, thankfully it worked out, but I just feel good knowing that, okay, I addressed those things. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't think about enough. And I love that you mentioned it. It's like the problems that you have now are probably going to carry forward no matter what it is that you do next. So try to do your best to address them now. Now what you've done is you've gone and you've created, like, there's so many different businesses that you probably could have created, but you decided to launch a community. And I know you're a part of a number of communities yourself. Why did you choose community specifically, and what has it been about your own personal experiences with communities that makes you love that model so much?
I didn't really set out to build a community. I've been, to your point, surrendering to a lot of like what life has had to offer me over the past couple of months. And so I guess I've always knew I wanted to do something on my own, but I didn't know what that would look like. And so I guess one of the insights for me was like, I just kept joining these communities. So it's like a fitness community in Denver, or like there's like two or three now. There's another one for like health and wellness, and there's Alluvians and H Street. And so I kept joining all these communities. So I was like, maybe there's like something here that like I like could be doing better, or like there's a gap that I'm missing. And I think one thing maybe that's unique about me is like generally a minority man who is vocal about his mental health. So there's a kind of limited number of people who fall in that bucket. So thought I could offer something unique in that sense of like cultivating a space that maybe was open to people of all kinds, like all diversities and flavors. And where I'm also like an introverted as well. So I think I really, really appreciate like structured and like facilitated type conversations. So I wanted to like offer that as well. So I think it was just like looking at all the communities that I was a part of and like asking myself, like, what did I love about them? Like, what did I think could be better? And like, what did I think I had to offer? And I think, I was just like so obsessed with the communities that I figured I'd build my own and like put my own flavor and spin on it. So that's kind of how I landed on the model.
What did it do for you? I mean, there's you, there's Dan without community, and then there's Dan with community, right? What did you felt that being a part of these, because you've joined a couple of them, what did you felt that it did for you personally?
Yeah. Well, the chance to connect with other people. So I think it brought out in some instances like the best parts of me or just like other parts of me. So like with when I'm working out with other people, it's funny how you can suddenly do, harder, run faster, work harder. It's a lot more fun. So here's June, my dog. So it just like brings out, I guess, like different parts of me that I wouldn't be able to discover alone. So I think that was really helpful. And then Alluvians was another one of the more transformational communities for me. And that too, was like nice to be surrounded with a bunch of other people who are like ambitious and yet vulnerable. And so like having that mix and being surrounded by people like me also brought out like different sides and of me. So it was nice to like have that support, know that I wasn't completely alone in the things that I was experiencing. And yeah.
Yeah, communities are taking off more than ever before. Our community, your community, Alluvians, 8th Street. These are doing so well because of what I think you mentioned earlier, the loneliness epidemic. People just aren't connecting with each other anymore. They're picking up the phone or, they're even at work. Like, I got to be honest with you. Like, again, I love my time at Salesforce, but I just kind of felt like sometimes I couldn't really share what I was going through with the people next to me. Because I was afraid of how I would be judged. And maybe that's a me problem. But it's just, it's hard to sort of wear your heart on your sleeve.
Yeah.
When you're supposed to be this corporate, put together professional sometimes.
Yeah. And well, to your point, like, I don't think it is your fault or like problem. Like, I think that's why a lot of these communities exist, because the spaces that we currently inhabit, like, work might not care about like cultivating these like honest and vulnerable situations and gathering people who are of like-mindedness. So I think that's where the beauty of communities are, because they're very intentional about that. And, like different settings provide different purposes and like have different agendas. And so I think it's nice to connect with communities that are really focused on cultivating a space where, people can connect and like be able to share the things that like they maybe don't feel comfortable sharing with the people around them, because that setting wasn't like manufactured to be that type of environment.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Those spaces, those communities, they're really like the tone is set by the leader. Right. So whoever's leading that community, because it creates this space to be vulnerable. And for you being vulnerable, for example, right, you being vulnerable and vulnerable with your struggles online, it allows people to enter the community knowing that they can be vulnerable too and share their story. Right. And you're just creating a space for them to share like that. That's awesome. I love what you're building, man. I think it's really amazing. There's so much more. We could probably do a part two. We didn't even get into like your running and your story there, but it's really incredible what you're building. Tell people, like, where can they learn more about the self-improvement movement, learn more about you, reach out to you and talk to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And Dan on LinkedIn, you spell my last name, A-H-N, DanT.com for like the newsletter, thesimlevelup.com for the community. And that'll be some good places to start.
I'll be sure to include those links in the show notes. Dan is offering like a crazy deal on joining his community right now. So I would definitely take a look at those links and consider checking out the self-improvement movement. Dan, what's one last piece of advice you'd give to my listeners to help them achieve their next big win?
Oh man, I'm usually shy away from advice. I shy away from advice, and maybe that is my advice, because I think advice is so like situational or like contextual based off of people's circumstances. So I almost never give advice unless like people really just push and push and push. And so I guess my advice, if I were to give one, would be to trust your like instincts and your intuition, because the things that you're experiencing are so unique to you that they're only like little bits and pieces that people can offer that will relate to like your authentic journey. So like somebody who, I don't know, was born up with a lot of money and whatever, got to a certain place in life, and you were born in like an entirely different situation and you want to get to that place in life, it's going to look, their advice and like their path to how they got there is going to look a lot different than yours because your starting point was so different. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just important to like honor a lot of like the context and the, yeah, like path that you've traveled so far, because that path heavily informs the path you're going to take next. So I really encourage a lot of people to like reflect, trust themselves, and like really take with a grain of salt like what other people say. So that's my advice.
I love that, brother. That's a great piece of advice right there. Thanks. Dan, thanks for coming on to Winning Streaks, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, buddy. It's been a pleasure.